As most of you are aware, this has been a this last weekend was a pretty busy weekend for the youth group. We had the privilege of taking a weekend and running up to Marble Falls, Texas, where we had our annual winter retreat. And Ken made a reference to it this morning that what we talked about was the topic of do hard things. Many of you may recall that back a couple of months ago, Ken brought for us a series of two or three lessons of the same title that covered, it was kind of a synopsis of what we looked in more detail at on the retreat. It comes from a book entitled Do Hard Things, written by a couple of teenage brothers, twin brothers, Alex and Brett Harris. And in the book, they describe a series of events in their lives which they found themselves pushed to do things that they didn't necessarily think they were capable of doing in earlier years of their life. They were around 17, 18 years old when they started seeing all of these events unfold. By the time they wrote the book, they were 19 years old, and they were traveling not just around the country, but around the world, doing seminars for teenagers, talking about ways in which you can succeed in life, both in, I guess if you would call, secular ways, as well as in spiritual manners. And the focus of the book centers around the idea that the expectation for teenagers has been set awfully low by society today. And I won't take the time to fully go through how they examined that and how they illustrated that, but I would challenge you or encourage you to go get the book. Read it. It's a very, very good book, not just for teenagers, but for adults as well. And tonight I want to give you one of those lessons, but before we do that, I want to tell you a little bit about who went on this retreat. We had an exceptionally good group this year. Grand total, we had right about 42, 43 people. There were, I believe it was 13 adults that went along, and so you can do the math and figure out that we had almost 30 teenagers that went along. One of the things I've become very impressed of with this retreat over the last couple of years is that we have a lot of visitors who come along. And some of these visitors are guys and gals who have been coming back 2, 3, and 4 years in a row because they enjoy spending time with the teens that we have here. And so, moms, dads, if you have your kids coming up through the ranks, I hope that you are looking forward to giving your children the opportunity to be a part of this great event that we have every year. Like I said, we go up to Marble Falls. It's Camp Hensel. You can look that up online and see some of the pictures and whatnot. I want to give a moment before I go any further. I want to give some special thanks to these folks right here. These are the moms, dads, young adults, some married, some single, who gave of their time. And some of them perhaps even took some vacation time so that they could come along and be a part of the lives of the children and the teens that we have here at Woodland Oaks. And I am very grateful that they were interested and willing in investing their time and their efforts and study in order to be a part of this. So if you see these folks around tonight and over the course of the next couple of weeks, please pat them on the back and give them a hug to thank them for being interested in the lives of the children that we have here. So I want to make sure that these folks get recognized. And leading into our lesson tonight, let me also give you this. We talked about on Saturday about three of the major hard things that teens need to do or that teens can do in order to raise the bar of expectations, in order to exceed those expectations and be successful in life, and in order to carry on, let me rephrase that, in order to maybe even start new trends for their generation and the generations that follow. And these are the three that they had class times over. Doing hard things that are too big to do alone. Being able to work together and reach out and do something that, you know what, this is a huge effort and I'm not going to be so arrogant as to think I can do it on my own, but I'm going to reach out and try to work with people who I may or may not have a whole lot in common with. They were challenged to do hard things that don't pay off immediately. That is perhaps in our society one of the hardest things to get a grasp on. I mean, we're a McDonald's society, right? I want to order it. I want to pull up about 50 feet and I want to have the food handed to me. I want to put forth an effort, and within a week, at the absolute most, preferably even sooner than that, I want to see the results. But life teaches us that not everything we do is going to pay off for us immediately. Some things it may take an extremely long time before you really begin to see the results of it. So they were challenged to do things that don't pay off necessarily quickly, but also to do things that go against the crowd. And perhaps this one goes without, could go without a whole lot of commentary behind it, because we know that as Christians, we are swimming against the current of what society tells us life should be like. Morals that we hold, standards that we adhere to. And that can be especially difficult as a teenager. But having spent the day on Saturday talking about these things, when we got together, I want to give you one lesson that I hope might encourage you to consider doing some of these types of hard things in your life as well. And I want to talk to you tonight about doing hard things that expand your comfort zone. If I were to give a definition of what a comfort zone is, perhaps the best thing I could say is it is that territory or area in which I feel comfortable functioning. For most of us, it's probably that sphere of events or activities that come naturally to us, things that we can do easily. And we've had lots of practice at doing them because they come to us easily. But I think I can also say with a pretty fair amount of certainty that any other hard thing that you might venture out to try to do, the three things that you saw on the screen prior to this, or anything else that you could come up with, any difficult thing that you have to try, you have to take this step first. And this, expanding our comfort zones, I think can also be described as perhaps the most terrifying hard thing that someone can do. And I think the reason why we could categorize it as that stepping outside of my comfort zone is the most terrifying thing I could do, is because there's so much at risk. There's a lot at stake here. We're risking embarrassment. We're risking failure. We're risking loss if we go beyond and try to do something that maybe we've never tried before. But here's the thing, is as I've just said a moment ago, of all the hard things that we could discuss, this one must be done. You will not be able to accomplish any new things in your life. You will not be able to reach any new goals without first expanding your comfort zone. Now, let me give you a story that came out of the book. One of the boys was describing when the first time he took a shower. And I want to just read this excerpt for you. I think it'll illustrate what I mean in the necessity of expanding that zone. He writes, I believe this is Brett writing. He said, "I didn't ask to be promoted from junior bath taker to first class shower taker. But one day my parents realized, hey, he's 8 years old and he's still taking baths. But baths were all I had ever known. Baths were neat and tidy undertakings where the water flowed safely in below my head. Providing I didn't splash too much, it also stayed below my head and out of my eyes. And before I could object that day, I found myself wearing nothing but my birthday suit and staring up at that dreadful shower head. It pointed down at me like an executioner's gun. And then Dad pulled the trigger. The shower began to rumble and hiss, and I was screaming before the first drop of water ever even hit. As scalding droplets stung my skin and water flooded my eyes, nose, and ears, I became convinced my parents hate me. They couldn't possibly love me. And what's more, I'm not sure I love them anymore either. But that was 10 years ago. The funny thing is, this morning I took a shower and didn't think twice about it. The hot water felt good on my face. I didn't worry about drowning. I didn't hate anybody. Isn't it incredible that what seemed so impossible when I was 8 is now a vital, enjoyable part of my everyday routine? You know, I understand that maybe it's a silly story of sorts, but I think it illustrates the point very well. That in order to have new experiences, in order to be able to do things that we've never done before, you will have to break through some comfort zones in your life. And there are numerous consequences to both sides, so that is, of breaking through zones or choosing not to break through these comfort zones. Earlier in the week, we played a game that we kind of just entitled, I Have Never. And many of you may have played versions of this. It's kind of an icebreaker game. The person in the middle will make a statement that says, I have never been out of the country. And then you have a consequence or an action that's taken on the part of those who either have been out of the country or, depending on how you're playing, have not been out of the country. What we did on the weekend is that we gave everybody a piece of chalk and a string. And we would make a statement that said, I have never been out of the country. If you had done that event, if you had had that experience, you had already drawn a circle around you. Well, once you have the experience, you get to step to the edge of your current circle, set it down, and you get to draw a brand new circle. You get to expand where you were just standing. But throughout the course of the game, you are only allowed to stand within the confines of the circle that you had drawn. Well, when you're in a small room and you have 30 people playing the game, eventually you start seeing circles come together and overlap. And one of the neat rules that we had is that if your circle overlaps someone else's, you now get to play with them as a team. And the experiences that each of you has had can benefit the other, even if only one of you has had that experience. And the goal was to press toward the middle of the room where we had a wonderful goodie bag of Buc-ee's snacks. And if you know what Buc-ee's is, you know that it was a goodie bag that the teens were all over like ducks on a June bug, okay? And so as they're pressing forward, it was interesting to see who had had certain experiences and who had not. And there were consequences that we were able to relate to in this idea of expanding your comfort zones. Let's say one experience equals one time you expand your comfort zone. On the positive side of it, every time you had a new experience, you moved closer to the goal. And as your experiences overlapped someone else's, you had an opportunity to influence other people. And at the same time, you broadened the opportunity for other people's influence to help you in your progress toward the goal. And so the more experiences people had, the more they began to come together in achieving the goal. But there were also negative consequences if you had not had as many experiences. You began to find that you had a much smaller circle of progress. There were fewer people as the game went along. There were fewer people to help you in reaching this goal of the center of the room. And I made the point to the kids. I said, you know, I think this is also a great example of how living or lowering the expectations for life actually enslaves somebody instead of give them more freedom, as some claim that it does. Have you ever met the slacker who turns around and he says, you know what, I love just being free. I can do whatever I want to do. I don't have to answer to anybody. And they never progress outside of their comfort zone. And they say that, hey, that's an awesome amount of freedom that I love to have. And we tend to think that freedom comes by only doing what comes easily and naturally. But what we found with our little game is that when your experiences are fewer, so is your progress. And you have a much smaller amount of room to be able to maneuver in your life than you would if you would step out and do something that was more difficult. And so as we press on, if you'll let me make this point, if we will take steps despite feeling uncomfortable, afraid, and inadequate, our comfort zones will expand. What we consider normal for us changes, sometimes radically, and we become a totally different person. But for the rest of our time tonight, let me throw out this idea. How do I get to the point that I can muster up the kind of courage that it takes to do something I've never done before? And the first thing I would submit to you is this: realizing that weakness can be God's greatest tool. People love to feel strong, right? Strong and smart? Sure we do. And it's because of that desire that we... And it's because of that desire that as we tend to go through life and as we tend to come to the edge of those comfort zones, the edge of the area where we know what's going on, when we begin to sense the pressure of, I'm not sure I can do this, we slam on the brakes, right? We stop just short of that line of where comfort ends and darkness begins. And not only do we slam on the brakes, but many of us throw that thing in reverse and we move as far away from that boundary as we possibly can. Because we're scared. We're scared to progress beyond what we know. And that fear causes us to put up fences around ourselves and use them as reasons to stay inside of our comfort zone. Here's what I mean. Consider the reasons we use to justify not doing something new. We say, well, I'm not as good as blank at doing that. I don't have that talent. Or we might even say, you know, I don't have those skills. That's not something I have developed. And because I don't have that skill set or I don't have those resources, I don't need to venture into that territory. And because of these two reasons, we also find ourselves saying, you know, because of this, I'm likely to fail. And I'm likely to fall on my face and look foolish. I'm going to look like a loser. And that risk is too high for me. I can't handle doing that. But consider for a minute, when we use these kinds of excuses for not doing something new in life, consider what we might actually be saying. God only uses the best and the brightest, of which I am not. And God only uses me or anyone else when God's only going to use me when I have everything in my life lined out perfectly and I have all my ducks in a row. That's when God's going to use me. And I got too many problems right now to try something new. And perhaps the most shocking one of all is I think on some level we're saying, you know, God only brings glory to Himself when I bring glory to myself. God will not be lifted up unless I am lifted up. Wow. Is that how God wants us to view ourselves? Is that how God works? Does He use only the best people with all the talent who have all aspects of their lives in order? Consider these for a minute. Abraham was a cowardly liar. Moses was adopted and he stuttered. Esther was shy and frightened. Rahab was a harlot. And yet God still used these people to do great things. How did He do that? Paul gives insight for us in 2 Corinthians 12, 7 through 10, which was read for us earlier. He said, therefore, so that I would not exalt myself, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan, to torment me, so I would not exalt myself. Concerning this thorn, I pleaded with the Lord 3 times to take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will most gladly boast all the more about my weakness, so that Christ's power may reside in me. So because of Christ, I am pleased in my weakness, in insults, in catastrophes, in persecutions, and in pressures. For when I am weak, then I am strong. God uses our weaknesses to prove His strength. We know that things are accomplished not because we're so great, but because He is so great. And such a realization can give us the necessary courage to break through our comfort zones and accomplish new things. The realization that our weaknesses can be God's greatest tools. But how can I have the courage if I'm still afraid? Well, secondly, I would submit to you is realizing that courage does not equal the absence of fear. We've already said that fear is a sort of fence that keeps us pent up behind our zones, right? And to be fair, we usually feel like we have good reason to be afraid. We're trying to keep something out of our lives that might inflict some sort of perceived harm. And so we sit right on the edge and we wait and we wait and we wait. What are we waiting for? Courage. The notion that I have to get rid of my fears before I can go do something new. We sit where it's comfortable and easy and we stare out at the things that scare us, hoping that one day, magically, we will no longer be afraid of them. And then we will be able to do what we've always dreamed of. The problem with that is that sitting will not cause your fears to go away. If I sit and stare at a palette of paint and a blank canvas, will I eventually become an artist? No. I must get up, grab the brush, take the paint, and start painting. Even if it looks horrible to start with, which if you've ever seen me draw, you know that it would. And if you sit by waiting for your fears to vanish, your wait will never end because you will never venture outside of that comfort zone. But when we learn to step out in spite of our fears, we will continue to learn and to grow and to mature in our lives. True courage is not the absence of fear. It is refusing to let fear control your actions. It doesn't mean that we stop caring about what happens, but it does mean that we act anyway in spite of our fears. Now, in full disclosure, some fears are healthy. It's not wise to go jumping into a tank full of sharks in order to prove that you have courage. Some fears we need to have, but what we are talking about here is doing things, is things that we could be and should be doing, but we aren't doing them because we don't want to fail or look foolish. And I can tell you this, if you spend your life clammed up only doing the things that come easily to you, one day, you will look back at your life and you will see a boatload of regrets and what ifs. And you will have no way to do anything about them. But to realize what true courage is to be free from fear. Realizing that courage is not the absence of fear, but it is refusing to let fear control your actions. Okay, so I find courage wonderful. I understand I have to step out in spite of my fears. But let's say I go out on that limb and I face my fears, Corey. What if I fail? The last thing I would submit to you tonight is that if you're going to press forward and expand that comfort zone, you have to understand that you cannot succeed without risking failure. Who likes to win? Okay, kind of a dumb question. I get it. We all like to win. And even if you say, well, I don't, we can certainly agree winning's a whole lot better than losing, right? Some of us in this room are more competitive than others. And a good competitive streak is not a bad thing to have. But a competitive streak can also breed within some of us an intense dread of failure. We look around and we say, well, if I do this and I fail, then everyone's going to know that I'm a loser. Well, let me ask you something. Do you see the problem with this all-or-nothing mentality? We limit ourselves to two options, win or disaster. Folks, please listen to me very carefully. Your life is not that restricting. Unless you are being purposefully foolish, failure is rarely total. Does God call us to be successful? No. God calls us to be faithful and leave the results to Him. He will take care of benefiting us. He will take care of bringing us through the failures. Our teens were challenged over the weekend to think about goals for their lives, not only now, but for the future. And I would encourage you to be the same way. At the early part of the year, that's usually when we're setting new goals for our lives. Well, let me ask you this. The goals that you have set in your life, the goals you have set for yourself and for your family, are they worth reaching? Are they worth reaching? Well, folks, if they're worth reaching, they are worth failing at along the way as you reach them. Every failure brings you that much more knowledge, that much more experience, and that much closer to your goal. Alex and Brett tell a story of one night where it was them and a bunch of guys standing around, and they said somebody came up with a bright idea to have a push-up contest. Who could reach 100 push-ups? Some of the guys looked around and they said, I'm not even going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. I know I can't reach 100 push-ups. Some of those guys looked around and they said, hey, yeah, I do that every day. Come on, let's do it. And then you had the knuckleheads like us who knew we couldn't do it, but we said, hey, that'll be fun. Let's try. Needless to say, they did not reach their goal of 100 push-ups. A few minutes later, they said, we found ourselves lying on the floor saying, why did we do this? Am I ever going to be able to get off the floor again? But here's the observation they made. It may be true that we failed in reaching our goal of 100 push-ups. But we guarantee you we got a better workout than the guys who did do it. Because those guys made it to 100 push-ups and stopped. Knowing they could have gone further, but they just chose not to. We pushed ourselves beyond what we thought we could do. And we were that much stronger because of the effort. You cannot succeed in life without risking failure. But you must trust that God is going to bring you through the failures to help you reach your goals. There will always be things that test your comfort level. But if you will move toward beyond that zone, if you will push to do things that may not come easily, that may not come naturally to you, those new things eventually will become the new norm for you. They will garner you a good reputation among coworkers, among family, among friends. They will bring you closer to your goals, whatever they may be. And you will be able to break through those zones when we realize that God's greatest tool is often our weaknesses. True courage is not the absence of fear. It is refusing to let fear dictate your actions and realizing that you can't succeed without risking failure. Tonight, I dare say there may be some of you here, some of us in this room, who are putting off very important life decisions and changes because we are trapped by that comfort zone. You're scared to step out and do what you know God wants you to do. Perhaps it's putting on Christ in baptism. Taking those steps in order to be clothed with Christ, to have your sins washed away, and to begin that relationship with Him. Or maybe you are being held back by fears of implementing a character trait or putting into practice a discipline that God calls us to have. And maybe even for some of us, maybe our fears have led us to make some very poor decisions in order to try to stay away from the edge of that comfort zone. Poor decisions that have come as a result of us running the opposite direction. Folks, God will bring you through the tests and trials and the fears that you have. But you must trust Him as you take those steps. Tonight, if you have any need to respond to the Lord's invitation, whether to put Christ on in baptism and begin that walk, or whether to repent of sins and be brought back into the fold so that you can be walking with God once again, what's stopping you from stepping outside of that comfort zone tonight? Why don't you take that step together right now while we stand and sing?